From the headquarters of the American Radio Relay League in Newington, Connecticut, this is ARRL, The Doctor Is In, a bi-weekly podcast addressing common and some not-so-common technical issues in amateur radio. This podcast is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. And now, here's your host, QST Editor-in-Chief Steve Ford, WB8IMY, and the Doctor himself, QST Contributing Editor Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Hello and welcome to The Doctor Is In. I'm Steve Ford, WB8IMY.
I'm Joel Hallis, W1ZR.
Let's talk about the zero beat, Joel. Not musically, if there is such a thing, but as it applies to CW. Tell everybody about the zero beat. I know you're a intense dyed-in-the-wool CW guy, so you know all about this.
I do go back to when it was a much more significant part of what we did as hams. And by the way, I think it does show up in music. I think that a zero beat is a function that happens with two signals that are heterodyne together. That is, they're mixed, just as they do in a radio, for example. But if the two signals mix together, the resultant signal that you get from that process includes a signal that's the difference between the two frequencies, also the sum and also both of the original ones and all kinds of harmonics and so forth. But the major one in many cases is the difference, and that's what gives you an intermediate frequency in your radio and other things. But if the two frequencies are exactly the same, the difference between them is zero. And if you're listening to the beat note that happens when you combine two signals, as you move them closer and closer together, the frequency of the beat note gets lower and lower and lower and lower, and eventually it disappears entirely.
That was very good. Could I hear that again?
Probably
lower
not.
Lower and lower and lower.
That's about it. And, you know, why do you care about that? Well, in the old days, which I go back to many of, we used to have separate transmitters and receivers. And if you were lucky and had a transmitter with a variable frequency oscillator, what you wanted to do if someone were calling CQ, for example, you'd want to tune your transmitter so it would be on the same frequency that they were transmitting on and probably listening on, because they probably zero beat at their station also, so they knew what frequency they were transmitting on. And the way you'd do that is you'd adjust your VFO and tell the carrier of your transmitter and the carrier of their transmitter, which were audible then because AM signals were sent with a carrier. And when the two carriers were the same frequency, the beat note disappeared. And that was called zero beating. You do it also with CW signals. It was important, by the way, if you do this, try this at home. When you do this, you don't have your full transmitter on, because otherwise you're putting signals all over the band as you search for the place where they're the same. So you just have the VFO itself on, so you just can hear it within your radio station, and you can tune so that you're on the same frequency as the other station. Sometimes you want to be on a slightly different frequency, so if you're working a DX station who's listening split, for example, you do the same thing, but you do a zero beat with the signal of the person who's talking, the last person who's talking to the DX station, and maybe he'll leave his receiver there and you'll be able to work him. Now, nowadays, of course, we don't use AM so much. A lot of people do, and you still have to do the same thing if you have your old AM station like I do. But modern transceivers avoid a lot of this by tuning the transmitter and receiver in synchronism. As you tune the VFO knob on your transceiver, it changes both the transmitter frequency and the receiver frequency and gives you a zero beat, which is handy because, among other things, there is your sideband signal is transmitted without a carrier, so you can't easily zero beat
the
sideband signal. What you can do, of course, and what you do when you're tuning somebody in is you tune the VFO until it sounds like a human voice.
Yes.
And that's a little tricky because different people have voices at different registers, and sometimes what you find is you're not quite on the same frequency. So it's a little harder to do. CW is a little easier because you do have a carrier, and you can tune the station you want to zero beat with to a zero beat where you don't hear him at all, and then tune your signal so it has the same zero beat, and then you're both on the same frequency. And then you can move off the frequency so that you both are at a distance so you can copy the beat note from your beat frequency oscillator. So it all comes together. To tune in a single sideband transmitter, if you happen to have an old single sideband transmitter from the 50s and a single sideband receiver, you have to do it in some way. One way is to tune the receiver so you can hear the person, and then turn off the BFO in your receiver so it doesn't sound like a person anymore. It just sounds like some strange noises. It doesn't demodulate properly. And then take your transmitter on CW mode, so it's just putting out a carrier, and tune that until you hear it in your receiver, and at some point when you have it tuned to just the right frequency, it'll act like the beat frequency oscillator in your receiver, and you'll actually hear the voice.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
So you can do that. It's not exactly zero beating in a sense, but it's doing the same function.
Sure.
So you can do it with single sideband if you're pressed and have to do that.
Now, getting back to CW for a moment, and you mentioned zero beating the signal. You're tuning your receiver until it goes to nothing. It goes to zero beat on the transmitting station's signal, and then you tune off so that you can hear what is being said. How far should you tune off, and why does it matter?
It doesn't matter too much. It's more a personal preference thing. A lot of serious CW operators like frequencies around 400 to 600 hertz. I think the standard would be more like 800 or 1,000. But most transceivers, for example, are settable for what the offset frequency is. And by the way, you don't have to zero beat. You know, if you have a good ear for music, if you tune the person you're listening to until their frequency is the same as the frequency that you have your offset set to, so you're in the right place, then your transceiver will automatically transmit on his frequency. But not everybody has enough capability to notice the pitch well enough to know what that is, if that's making any sense.
Yeah, I mean, if you're tone deaf, that would be problematic.
That would be problematic.
Well, now, what if the guy that you're listening to, that you're hoping to talk to, what if he's running really tight filtering? I mean, if you tune too far off, you're going to be outside his filter.
Absolutely right. That can be a problem. There were some early rigs that were designed for a single sideband and put in CW as an afterthought. One of them, strangely enough, was the Collins KWM2, which was a very popular transceiver, one of the first HF transceivers. Covered all five HF bands at the time, and it was built as a sideband transceiver, and somebody said, oh, we have to do CW also. And the way they did CW was they put in a tone. So you actually were keying a tone in a single sideband transmitter, which comes out acting like CW. The problem was the harmonic distortion of their audio stages was such that if they did put the carrier at, say, 600 to 800 hertz, you'd also get all the harmonics within the pass band of the sideband filter. So you'd get 1,200 and 1,800 hertz, which would be a problem. So they said, oh, well, we can fix that. We'll make the tone up at 2 kilohertz, up near the top of the sideband filter. So the harmonics will be outside of the sideband filter. Of course, everybody else with any other kind of radio was listening for a tone at about 1,000 hertz. So if you call somebody with your KWM2, and if they had a transceiver without a separate receiver incremental tuning, which many of them didn't have at that time, or a separate VFO, they'd say, oh, this guy's a little off frequency. So they'd tune till it sounded right. Now, of course, the guy with the KWM2 said, oh, I can't hear that guy anymore very well. Let me tune mine so it's where I think it ought to be. And what would happen would be they'd sort of, in lockstep, one step at a time, move themselves out of the band. So you have to be very careful about that. You have to. So this, you know, it's very good to be able to adjust your frequencies so they're similar.
In a previous podcast, we were talking about software-defined radios, and I have a software-defined radio at home, my transceiver. I won't mention the brand at all, but the software can make it remarkably easy to zero beat. And in fact, my radio has a button that I can push when I'm in the CW mode, and it will automatically, it's quite a thing to hear, will automatically zero beat to the signal.
Absolutely. Mine does that as well. That is kind of slick. And I also have a little meter that shows where it is, where the person's transmit signal is compared to where my passband is centered. So if I do have a narrow filter, I can make sure I have them in the middle of it. And that's very slick. And that can work usually for both, anything with a carrier. It requires a carrier to do that, at least the way they do it. So it can work with CW or AM. I guess it could work with FM, although I don't know that they bother with that because it doesn't have to be tuned that carefully usually. But the other thing it can be done with is the old double sideband suppressed carrier. It takes a lot more work to do that. But because you have signals on both sides of the carrier, you can actually determine where the carrier would be if there were one. With single sideband, though, I don't think they've come up with a way to make that work.
Now, I've never seen it work, no.
Some systems, military and commercial systems using single sideband, have a suppressed carrier but not suppressed quite as much, and they send out a little bit of one called a pilot carrier that is normally not particularly audible, but there's enough there, and the receivers are designed specifically for it, and they can actually lock onto that. So if you reduce your sideband or your carrier rejection, unbalance your balance modulator or whatever, it's possible for somebody at the other end to actually zero beat your carrier. But normally, if your carrier is not there, you can't do it.
So zero beating is important after a fact.
It is.
Wouldn't you say?
It is important, and it's just that it happens without you being aware of it most of the time, especially with single sideband.
It just comes naturally. I mean, you tune it in until it sounds normal,
right.
And that's it.
And then you find out the other person is actually a woman or something, and you've got it tuned wrong. I mean,
yes.
That's happened to me.
Oh,
many.
I've done that too.
Yeah.
You bet.
So you have to have a knowledge of what the other person sounds like to make that work well. And of course, most people on average sound on average, but there is a distinction sometimes between genders and or ages. Another thing is younger operators
yes.
can sound different. And so you tune them in so they sound like their grandfather, and then all of a sudden you find out that the next time they're on a different frequency because they're chasing you around to make you sound right because you're off frequency.
Yes, and as we just mentioned, CW, during contests, I know you have an awful lot of people running those tight filters, and if you don't zero beat and do it properly, you won't be heard.
That's for sure.
Okay, well, let's take our break for DX Engineering. We'll
okay.
come back, and I have a question.
Every ham radio operator knows speed matters. Whether it's jumping in your truck during an emergency or staying up all night for lightning-quick contesting, seconds count. And there's nothing more painful than being off the air waiting for equipment to arrive. At DX Engineering, we know a thing or two about speed. You can count on us to provide the fastest shipping in the ham universe. How fast? You get same-day shipping on most orders placed by 10 p.m. Eastern Time. It's that fast. So that new rig, antenna, cable assembly, or replacement part you need will make it to your shack in plenty of time to work a remote DXCC entity or dominate the competition in the next contest. And the best part is DX Engineering offers free shipping for most orders over $99. Radio waves travel at the speed of light. Lucky for you, so does DX Engineering. Visit dxengineering.com. That's dxengineering.com.
And we're back, with a question about one of your antennas, Joel.
Oh.
Yes. Steve, N5EP, noted that he built one of your two-band coupled resonator antennas for 40 and 20 meters. He's been very happy with it, as I have been with mine. He says, with it up only 30 to 35 feet, it outperforms a multi-band ground-mounted monopole with 32 radials by typically an S unit. That's pretty good.
Yeah.
He continues to note that he lives in a suburban environment, and the noise floor on both antennas is normally about S6 to S7. He was hoping that with the horizontal polarization, he would pick up less noise, and he's asking if a greater height for the dipole would make a difference on noise pickup. What do you think?
Well, it might make a little bit of difference, but generally, you know, it all depends on where the noise is coming from. If you make the antenna higher, it'll tend to pick up signals from lower elevation angles, which mean those signals that are further away. So if the noise is coming from fairly close in, you may reduce it somewhat, but it's not going to be a dramatic effect, and the noise probably comes from all over. So you're going to have a mix of, you know, you may
yes.
get a different noise pattern than you got before, but it may not necessarily improve it. I mean, it can't hurt. And in fact, it'll have some other benefits. Your 20-meter signal will work even better at 40 feet than at 35, and your 40-meter signal will work significantly better. It's still not at its optimum height, which would be a half wavelength or higher. But it'll work better the higher you go. So it's a good thing to do, but I don't know that it'll improve your noise reduction, but it could improve your signal pickup, and that would give you a signal-to-noise ratio improvement. And now, in terms of the actual difference between the two antennas on signals, one S unit doesn't surprise me. If your meter is properly calibrated, that equals about 6 decibels. And typically, a horizontal antenna will have a 6-decibel advantage at the angle at which it is optimally receiving from, which is a function of height. So at a height of 35 feet, it's probably around 28 degrees elevation, which is, you know, good, because it's not just there, it's on either side of that too. So the lower
right.
portion of that is good for DX. The upper portion is good for medium range communication. So that would explain the difference between the two. But, you know, one thing, while you say the noise sounds the same in both, keep in mind that if the noise stays the same with both antennas and the signal is 6 dB stronger, you've actually improved your signal-to-noise ratio by 6 decibels with that horizontal antenna. So you've actually met your objective, even though the noise itself seems the same. But the fact that the signal is louder improves your reception capability. So horizontal antennas, you know, are quite effective compared to vertical antennas, particularly if you can get them close to half wavelength high. And that's why on lower frequency bands, 40 meters, 80 meters, 160 meters, and so forth, many people use vertical antennas, even though they don't get that ground reflection advantage, because the only way to get a low angle signal is to have a vertical antenna, because they can't get an antenna 300 feet high for 160 meters or whatever.
Okay, excellent. Thank you, Joel.
My pleasure.
A ARRL The Doctor Is In is brought to you by DX Engineering, helping you shrink the globe. See their website at www.dxengineering.com. For more information on amateur radio or the ARRL, visit us on the web at www.arrl.org. You can also find us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter by searching for ARRL. If you have a question or comment for the doctor, send an email to doctor@arrl.org. Background music is courtesy of Ben Sound at www.bensound.com. This program is provided under the copyright of the ARRL. Until next time, I'm QST Managing Editor Becky Schoenfeld, W1BXY 73, and thanks for listening.